Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time of the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it is Friday, April 12th, 2024. Here's a headline just to give you a sense of what's going on in the world. This is from the business section of today's New York Times. It's not exactly relevant to what I'm going to be discussing with my distinguished guest who's patiently waiting to be for his introductions, but it is it's always stuff that's always on my mind. So NPR roiled by editor claiming liberal bias, and that is the headline in New York Times. It was brought on by an essay written by a senior business editor who had worked for NPR for 25 years, Yuri Berliner, who wrote an article or an essay published by the Free Press that said essentially people at every level of NPR have comfortably coalesced around the progressive worldview. I had a laugh when I read this. I believe that absolutely every person of any ideological stripe, I'm exaggerating for the sake of making this point, feels that he is a lonely voice in a chorus that is tilted against him. And I know this as the lone lefty covering Chicago politics since the 80s, or since the, 1981, ladies and gentlemen. Let's just pause and think about that. I have never seen anybody with an ideology remotely resembling mine in the mainstreams of any newspaper or outlet in Chicago when it comes to covering our mayors and our the way the economic development pie is divvied up in the city and how unfair it is. And so, Mr. What's your last name? Mr. Berliner, I feel your pain, my friend. I don't believe it's true. And well, it all depends what you define by progressive, and liberal. I mean, progressive and liberal are such watered down terms, it's almost meaningless. So, I don't know. Oh boy seems to be upset because they don't have someone with a point of view of, let's say, Donald Trump. And Berliner, I would say to you this. How could you realistically allow somebody on NPR or any news outlet that isn't Fox, that isn't open propaganda, to have a worldview like Donald Trump? All he does is lie. Donald Trump engages in just lie. He said he won the election that he lost. How are you realistically going to have a conversation? I don't understand. I feel your pain. You're a conservative. You feel alone. I don't know. Maybe people don't talk to you in a cafeteria. You know, they walk down. Don't let Berliner sit at our table. You can't sit at the cool table at NPR. Well, who is at the cool table at NPR? But anyway, I don't know. Dude, I listen, as a lefty in Chicago, struggle in vain to find an ally in something like TIFFs for all these years. I feel your pain, Berliner, but I don't know. It's kind of a being a legitimate news outlet saying, well, I see the point. Maybe Donald Trump. I don't know. What is the point? He tried an insurrection and it failed. You know, I don't know what the point is, Berliner. You're going to have to think about that one a little more. All right. That's the front page news in the business section of the New York Times. Without further ado, I'm going to ask my distinguished guest to introduce himself. And then away we go. Distinguished guest.
Hi there, Ben. My name's Zach Cam. I'm so happy to have you on. I wish I could say I was a long-time listener, first-time caller, but, you know, I've only recently been introduced to your work. So I came into the, like, news cycle because I set a flag on fire in front of City Hall a couple weeks ago. I'm a Marine Corps veteran. I did two tours to Afghanistan doing counter IED stuff. I did a total of 14 months there. When I got out, I became like disillusioned with U.S. imperialism. There was a lot of like, what did I just do in that war? What did I just do with my life? And then I got out right before the Ferguson riots. And so I feel like those were kind of like one of the biggest ones that where police militarization was really in on full display. So I was able to kind of use my experience from the actual military to talk about militarized police.
All right. So for most Chicagoans, you will be known as the guy who burned the flag.
That's fine with me.
And for whom, as opposed to Alderman Byron Sixto Lopez, who was a guest on the show last week.
Yeah.
Who was attempted to be, the city council attempted to punish him, or some alderman attempted to punish him for burning the flag. So let me one more time remind listeners and remind aldermen, it was Zach Cam who burned the flag, not Byron Sixto Lopez.
That's correct. Don't take that from me.
And then one more time for Alderman Bill Conway. So Alderman Bill Conway, in the debate that followed the burning of the flag, Zach, when the city council moved, I don't know if you listened to the debate. We're going to do a whole deep dive on it, which I will send you the link if you don't listen to the show, because it's going to be a good one. We have all the different comments that the Alderman made. We're going to be analyzing them. Anyway, in that debate, Alderman Conway said, you know, there is a First Amendment that protects people's right to protest and speak out and even burn a flag. But there are consequences for that behavior. And if you burn the flag, that does not warrant. You do not have a right. You may have a right to burn a flag, but you don't have a right to be chairman of the Housing Committee. Byron Sixto Lopez is chairman of the Housing Committee. And I had to point out Bill Conway. Byron didn't burn the flag. The guy who burned the flag was Zach Cam.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely correct. Zach Cam should not be the chairman of the city council housing committee.
Yeah.
That's the guy. Okay.
But I disagree with that analysis, because like you shouldn't be published. So the First Amendment protects you from the government, right? So it doesn't protect you from consequences. I agree with that. But it should protect you from censorship from your peers, which is an arm of the government. So if people want to take what you've done and then not reelect you, that's a very different thing than an arm of the government punishing you for using your First Amendment rights. Because if you can be punished for using your rights, do you have them?
That is a great point. I was trying to make a joke, but you trumped my ace with a great point.
Sorry.
The joke is that Byron's the guy who, by
yeah,
your,
no, like that's the they're wrong from like the first, yeah. From right off the gun, they're just wrong factually. But yeah. That's all you can really expect from people like that.
All right. So, Zach, I want you to tell your story, how you got to this point.
Sure.
And you started, you gave a little bit in the introduction, but it's a much larger story indeed to take us through, because I had a just so folks know this, I had a little conversation with Zach. We must have talked on the phone for almost an hour, I want to say.
I think over.
But before we do this, I just want to thank Charles Henderson, who was the one who bridged, led me to Zach. So when I read about Byron getting in trouble for the flag burning protest, and then I think I saw a clip of you talking on another radio, on a radio show, maybe NPR. Maybe that's what they're talking about, the liberal bias. Although Zach Kamm is not a liberal, ladies and gentlemen.
That's true.
But Charles, who was on the show last week, reached out and connected us. So, Charles, thank you very much for doing that. All right, Zach, fascinating story. You live in Chicago now, but you're not from Chicago. You originally hail from Southern California, Orange County. I'm doing this from memory.
Yeah.
And you found yourself in the Marines. So why don't you just like tell your story a little bit?
Sure.
What kind of kid you were in high school, and how did that lead to you enlisting in the Marines, and when did you enlist?
Yeah.
Take it away.
Sure. So I was kind of a fighter my whole life. Every year I was in school, I kind of got suspended for fighting at some point. I came from a big family. I'm the fourth of five. And so when I got into high school, I was into wrestling and I played water polo, which are kind of like combat sports, basically. My older brothers are all incredibly, incredibly smart. And they were able to go to some of the best universities in the country and in the world. And I'm a competitive guy. So it's like, if I can't even compete with you, because like, I'm not that smart, you know, but if I can't compete with you, like maybe I'll just go find another game, you know. And I graduated high school in 2009, which means I was 11 for 9/11. And so that was like a very formative part of my life. I think it's worth mentioning that my parents were all into like Fox News, conservative talk radio. That's like we would listen to Laura Ingraham and Rush Limbaugh on our way to like school and stuff, just kind of casually, you know. So that's the kind of world I was growing up in. So, but I think even broader than that, like, it, you know, college or the military are kind of the two like legitimate paths, let's say, you know. And so when I figured out I couldn't win, I was good at fighting, you know, I had been doing this wrestling and stuff. And so I was like, oh, you know, well, fuck it. Let's just, you know, join the military. And I have kind of like a why not me attitude a lot of the time. So it's like, am I really that much better than anybody else? And why shouldn't I go and do? And at the time, I thought, you know, that I would be helping, that I would be, you know, helping the people. At the time that I joined, I thought I was going to Iraq, and I ended up going to Afghanistan. So yeah, I joined when I was 19. I had a little, I had to wait a little bit after graduating. It's just administrative stuff. Kind of just happens. And so I did my first tour to Afghanistan in 2011, going into the winter there, and that was a route clearance deployment. So I was in the Helmand province, and we're rolling around in these trucks and trying to find bombs. Before they found us, basically. So I did that for 7 months, and then we got about 7 months back at home. And then we went back, and this time I was directly attached to an infantry unit. And so I was doing the same kind of thing, but instead of with trucks, just with our feet. I became pretty disillusioned during my first deployment.
Wait, hold on. Before you get into the disillusionment, just explain what do you mean by find bombs before they find us?
Oh, okay. So, like everybody knows IEDs, right? Improvised explosive devices. So a lot of the times they'll target bigger ones at trucks and convoys and stuff. So those will be the big ones by the road. But then they will also put smaller ones where they think you'll do foot patrols and try to get you like that. So we would get We had like metal detection, which was pretty dumb because they were not using metal in their IEDs by the time I got them, by the time I got there. So yeah, you would just like basically use your eyes, use this metal detector, look for kind of, it's like tracking almost, like where you're just looking for signs of disturbed earth, of like ant trails where somebody's trying to hide a wire, and you're just trying to like, it's a mixture of that and like, can I be unpredictable in my path, right? And so that's what I would always do, is like, okay, well, this path is hard as fuck. And if it's hard as fuck for us to get, then it's going to be hard as fuck for them to hide an IED here, right? And so that was always like my big strategy, whereas other people were just like, oh, I want to find them. Like, I want to get my count up so that when, you know, we get out, we can brag about. But.
And were you scared doing this?
Yeah. You become pretty numb. There's this weird thing, and we talk about it a lot, like on deployment, where you really only care about dying the first and the last month you're there. Because like the first month you're still like, oh, you know, this is new. And then the last month you're like, oh shit, I almost made it home. Like now, like I almost did it. Like I can't give up now. Right. So in those kind of middle months, you're just kind of like, this is it. And I kind of signed up for this. As combat engineers, though, as the guys with the sticks, the metal detectors, we were very much of the attitude that if anybody was to hit an IED on our patrols, like, it would be us, you know? It's just like, here we are, 20, 21, and we'd rather get blown up than have to write somebody's mom a letter about how you fucked up and now their kid's dead or doesn't have legs or some shit, you know? And so, it's kind of dumb, but... you know, sometimes you'd give shit the stomp test. It's like, you don't know what it is. You don't know if it's a bomb or not, but if you step on it, it'll go off or it won't. You know, like there's one final way of figuring it out.
So excuse my ignorance, and I apologize for my ignorance. So the bombs go off if you step on them, or are they set off by an ignition that's someone sees you in the area and then they ignite them?
Yeah, see, that's the thing, is they have all sorts. So they'll have ones that they attach to cell phones, shortwave radios. There are pressure plate ones. So like, yeah, if you step on it, it'll close a circuit. They have one specifically like anti-combat engineer, so that like if you disturb the dirt, it's like super coiled, and so there's like, if you like even move it a little bit, there's a good chance you'll set up the thing. So it's for people who are going to be like disturbing what they've like planted, like maybe a fake one a little ways away, and then like they're going to try to get you to like start looking at stuff, and then it blows up in your face, you know? So
wow, it's a real mind, just, I mean, Zach, it's just it's almost like an impossible task.
Yeah.
Because if it could be set up by someone far away watching you from a cell phone, what good will discovering it be?
Yeah. Yeah. And then you learn later that, like, they didn't have a plan for the whole war. They didn't have any direction. We were just going out there every day for fucking shits and giggles so that other generals could get their times in there, so they could get their medals and stuff. And like, I don't know if you're familiar with the podcast called Blowback, but it wasn't really until it took me a while, because the first three seasons are about Iraq and then Cuba and then Korea, which, you know, I have no connection to, so it was easy to listen to. But listening to that one of Afghanistan, and just listening to how there was absolutely no fucking plan, there was no goal, everything was just like, make people money, make higher ups more decorated. And so, like, now I've got friends dead from the Taliban, friends dead from killing themselves. And for what? You know, literally nothing. And so that's kind of like why I'm here, is like, I'm finding my voice and trying to tell people that the U.S. military does not do what they think it does. And it's a huge waste of money and human life on both sides.
And so then when you use the pronoun they, you're alluding to the U.S. military, the people who are in charge,
yeah,
of the war in Afghanistan. Okay.
That's right.
So I cut you off to get a little more detail about the IEDs right when you were saying when you got disillusioned. So why don't you go back to that and explain the process of getting disillusioned?
Sure.
What your mind was like when you first went there?
Yeah.
and what your mind and what the disillusionment meant. Go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you a story that not a lot of people know. In my platoon, it's known as Hands Across Afghanistan. And this was just, you know, we've talked before. I'm just kind of like a friendly guy. And, you know, I'm willing to get violent when violent needs to be, but I want to be a happy, kind person generally. And so on one of my first missions, we were doing route clearance. So we've got these trucks, 50, 75,000 pounds, and we're driving them over infrastructure that's meant for wagons and donkeys and, you know, fucking motorcycles and shit. So like, we're crushing these bridges, just destroying them. And so we had to get out. We're trying to figure out how we're going to get people back in here to repair these bridges, but we're stuck. And so these people need to cross the river. So we have Marines like in this little, I mean, it's not a river. It's like 8 feet wide. So we have like Marines in the thing, passing people's shit to the other side, helping people go to the other side. I'm out, pulling security with one of my NCOs. And, is like one of the people right in charge of me, for people who don't know. So I was standing there, and this guy, or an Afghan guy, comes right up to me, and he puts his arms out, and he kind of is just like calm. And so I'm like, whatever, you know, like, dude needs a hug. And so I gave him a hug, and my corporal, he was like, that dude is waiting for you to pat him down. And I was like, oh, you know, and then it was like a click, you know. And, you know, it doesn't make me sound like the most badass Marine, you know, of all time. Like, they're going to fucking write a book about me. But like, I think that's really where it started, was like, if I knew these people in any other circumstance, I don't think that we'd be trying to kill each other, you know?
In other words, you've been put into a situation where it was either in your mind, it was either me or him. And I'm going to have to shoot him first to keep him from shooting me.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. There's a lot more discipline in the US military than there is like the IDF or something like that. Not to say that like the American military is like this shining beacon of military morality or anything, but like, I was going back through some of my pictures in getting ready to talk to you. And so one of the biggest things that I have PTSD from was on my second tour. We were doing some like breaking down of these bases the first time Biden lied about pulling out of Afghanistan, like around 2012, 2013. So we're out there, combat engineers, we do explosives, building stuff, destroying stuff. So we're there to tear down this base, and our security leaves early. And they're supposed to be holding this whole town back from getting to us as we pack up and leave. And then they'll pack up and leave before us. But they didn't do that. They just left as soon as like, so we had like between 1400 and like 2000 people, you know, rightfully angry. You know, it's year fucking whatever, 10 of 12, I think, of this occupation. You know, we're picking up and leaving. So why not like kick us on the ass and like show us the way out, you know? And so they were just hucking rocks, dude. Like, I can show you pictures of this. It looks like these armored trucks are shot like with bullets, but this is all just rocks that people are throwing. And so I was one of the first people out, because I was in a truck three or four in front. So I had like the breathing room on the side of my truck to actually like get out and start dispersing this crowd. And yeah, so like, they told us don't shoot. They're probably trying to like stage a you know, stage it so that they can tape or video Marines killing civilians, right? And escalating too far. And so it's just like, okay, so we're not allowed to fucking shoot. And so, which is fine. I wasn't there to slaughter civilians, and so I didn't really want to be shooting in them anyways. And so I like made my way back. There's some like physicality to it. Some just like, you gotta move back and like, and all that sort of stuff. But then the problem came when this guy took one of the bags off the side of the truck. So we have these like encryption machines for all of the communication stuff, and you are not ever allowed to let that get into the hands of the enemy, ever, 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 right? And so this guy has this bag, and I'm just like fucking begging him, to put it down because I'm going to have to shoot him. I'm going to have to kill him if he tries to get away with this. So I was like begging him to drop it, and he eventually did. But like, so just like the amount of discipline from, you know, not to like toot my own horn or anything, like, but in comparison to what's going on in fucking Gaza and Palestine right now is just absolute, you know, there's no discipline. It's just a bunch of people doing whatever the fuck they want. And it's a horrible, horrible situation.
When did you get out of the Marines?
2014. Summer.
So 2014, so you didn't re-enlist.
No,
I didn't. You did 5 years. By the time you left, all right, so let's just follow this. I would say you were, based on the stories you've told me, pretty apolitical. In other words, you didn't go enlist because, I feel as though our country was under attacked.
I would say that that's actually true, though, because like I said, like my parents were big into the Fox News, big into like the conservative talk. And so the way that they were covering these wars and covering the military and veterans and stuff, it's just like, you know, so it was more political than a lot of people who joined because of the poverty draft, you know? So I actually came up through a middle-class family. Like my dad was a dentist. And so it's not like I didn't have other options, but I was raised in such a way that like, you know, it was one of the two things, like, I don't know. All of my grandfathers like were in the military at some point. And then like my cousin is in the Air Force right now. So we do have like kind of a tradition of it in my family. And so I would say it was very much political. But I started becoming disillusioned with those political ideologies while I was in. I never really had a name to them. I knew I was upset. I knew that like the government was corrupt and all this sort of stuff, but I didn't really know the mechanisms or anything like the depth of how I kind of understand it now, you know?
And so when I was listening to your story, I was thinking of Pat Tillman, who was just briefly for listeners, was a football player, played for the Arizona Cardinals, and after 9/11 enlisted. Was he a Ranger? I can't remember which.
Yeah, I think he was.
Ranger. He was undergoing some sort of political transformation while he was serving, and he ended up getting killed. And so we don't know the full extent of the political transformation.
Yeah. But he was killed by Americans. Just so the listeners know, it's a confirmed fact that it was
friendly fire.
Yeah.
As they say, one of the most ironic terms in the world, friendly fire.
Yeah. Which is crazy because now even in the last couple of Super Bowls, they're doing like Pat Tillman this and Pat Tillman that. It's like, why don't you tell the people what happened to Pat Tillman? You know, you use his name. Why don't you tell people what happened, how like the government tried for years to cover it up? And then it just like too many people talked and it forced their hand. But like there was this big guy that had been killed by our own people, and they like, you know, they're very willing to lie to us about it.
Zach, so I really don't want to go to this path, but it's so tempting because I was really fascinated by Pat Tillman's story and his life and the aftermath, and there's some good documentaries on it. He was sometimes, I believe, it was intentional. Sometimes I that's never in my mind been cleared up. Because he said, "I'm Pat Tillman. I'm Pat fucking Tillman."
Yeah.
And so, anyway, I don't want to go down that path.
No,
it's powerful stuff, and I urge listeners to go read some books or watch the documentaries about the life of Pat Tillman. The point is that Pat Tillman, in terms of he died, he was killed before he could articulate where he was, fully articulate where he was ideologically. So we're like each side is claiming him to a certain degree, and his voice is not there, Zach, to say, this is who I am. This is what there were people saying on the left. Oh, you know, he was reaching out to Noam Chomsky. And he wanted to meet with Noam Chomsky because he was influenced by the ideas of Noam Chomsky. I don't think he ever actually met with Noam Chomsky. He was and then there's people on the right who, like you said, he's a great hero. He sacrificed his career for our country, even though he became disillusioned. We all know that.
Yeah.
So when you were, I was just thinking of him when you were talking, because there's some veterans get disillusioned in a way that becomes political, if you follow what I'm saying. They start thinking about the causes of wars and, you know, how people are lied to every single war we've ever had. You know this by now. That's why I thought of you and Pat Tillman. So by the time you come out, did you have a clear idea in your mind about the motivations for people creating those wars? Or did you start studying it after you left the military in 2014?
Particularly in my second tour, it became very clear that our presence near poppy fields and not setting them on fire, that was like the biggest red flag to me. That was the biggest, like, stop trusting these people. Because we knew, selling opium is how the Taliban makes money. Here we are basically guarding these fucking poppy fields. Cause when you're patrolling it, what are you doing? You're guarding it, right? And so I don't know. I have thoughts about it, about the CIA and the global opium trade and the fact that we just so happen to have an opioid crisis here while we happen to be occupying the world's foremost opium producer, you know? That was really when I was like, oh, we're not trying to win this war. And so if that's the case, then what is it, you know? And I don't really think that I really got that clear of a picture until I got to Blowback, because it's just, I'm a podcast guy. I love it. And so it was put in such a way that is perfect for me to consume and hear. And then that, but yeah, it's just you can't ignore, the waste. You know, you see as you're going through the checklist for all this shit, how much it costs. And you're just how does a fucking field toilet cost this much? How does this or that cost this much? And it's people talk about Donald Trump and how much money they made. But Dick Cheney, that whole gang, they walked away with billions of dollars, so much more than Trump and his cronies. And they're not even talked about anymore. You know, we've gone back to whitewashing their legacy to try to make it seem like they were good people. But so I think it was, that was probably when I was where's the money going? Why are we here? And so, I became more disillusioned the first time, but they don't do a good job of telling you the ways you can get out if you start disagreeing with the war and stuff. So they don't publicize that. I know more of those things now, since getting out, that I could have been a conscientious objector. But there's you know, just this sense of fraternity and just okay, I made a commitment. I did 4 years to the day. I went as a boot, that's a new person. And then I came back as an older, a little bit saltier. And then I had people underneath me, seven people. And so it was you do it for them at that point, you know? And then you're okay, well, I can't get out anyways, you know, what can I do to make this better for basically everybody? And so I tried to just it's kind of the propaganda where it's oh, I'm going to be a good cop and I'm not going to do these things. But it's if you're part of a system that does it, your individual actions don't really mean that much, you know? And so, but I was contractually obligated to do it, not in a way that, you know, I would fucking spend the rest of my time breaking rocks in Fort Leavenworth, or I could, you know, help guide these people and try to get them through a war and try to get them home to their parents. And I did. So, you know.
And so you came home in 2014. You're 24 years old. I presume you went back to Southern California.
Yeah.
This is before you moved to Chicago. Mm-hmm. So what kind of country did you see? You know, you're coming from a war zone where every day you're going out to find explosives that could just literally blow you up. It really is a maddening, insane. There's no logic to God, I wouldn't have lasted a minute in the military, Zach. I mean, there's just no logic to what they're asking you to do.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. What's even the purpose of it? Again, I'll repeat it. The people could blow you up with a cell phone.
Yeah.
So what good is finding
I mean, like, it's even more terrified from the not homemade side, right? Like, people can blow you up with a 7-pound missile that's being guided by a satellite, you know?
Wow.
like, that's what's happening to a lot of people. Like, I don't know. At least yeah. I had a fighting chance for the IEDs.
All right. So you come home.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And so, like, what is that transition like? What does America suddenly look like to you? Having returned from Afghanistan?
I think it's kind of like one of those situations when you come back just from being outside this society. I think it's the same, like, you know, people who study abroad, people who do prison time, and you know, just people who come back and you just have like a different way of looking at things. I think that Americans are very, very selfish and they don't understand like the ways that people have gotten through the world because we've become so like individualized and atomized. But like, if you look to our closest sort of parallel, which is the UK, like they don't have a problem with public healthcare or like, you know, helping people who are in need generally more because their grandparents, you know, slept in the tunnels under London while I was being bombed for 6 years. You know, they know that they were never going to get through that unless they just banded together. They didn't talk about money. They didn't talk about, oh, what's the exchange rate of this? No, you fucking sleep and you hope that the bombs don't get through. And then the next day you get your ass up and you try to rebuild your city, right? Like that. But that's so alien to Americans, right? Like, for some point that I'm glad that they don't have to know those experiences, right? Because it's a terrible thing, right? Yeah. But on the other hand, it does give you some sense of empathy and the necessity of society. And I just want to touch on a point where like American society does so much to like venerate the military, but also like hold that like this individualistic attitude, but like that is the opposite of the military, right? For the first 3 months of Marine boot camp, right? The first 3 months you're in, you cannot use personal pronouns. You cannot say I, you can't say me. It's recruit cam request to use the head. Recruit cam says this, like you are not allowed to use personal pronouns because they don't want you to think of yourself as an individual. Right. They spend a lot of time talking about how you will die for the person to the left and to the right of you. And like that's how they get people to jump on grenades. That's how they get people to say, you know, if somebody's got to pop around this corner first, if somebody's got to lead this patrol, it's going to be me, you know, or whatever, you know, like that's how they can get you. And it's just so the opposite of American society, which is just like me. How does this affect me? If it's not going to specifically affect me, then I don't want it, you know, like then it shouldn't be funded and all this stuff. And so it's just like, it's this crazy thing where, you know, everybody in the military is guaranteed housing, guaranteed food, guaranteed healthcare. And like, if they really wanted to look up to us, they would try to enact those same things in their communities, you know?
That was a great riff, young man. That was, yes. Yeah, if you really want to emulate us, give us free healthcare.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's like, yeah, people, I get a good amount of disability from the VA, and people are like, oh, yeah, must be nice. I'm like, yes, that's why I want you to have it too, you know?
Yeah. I know the price that you have to pay to get healthcare, which should be a right for all.
Yeah.
You know, you have to like put your life online.
Yeah.
You know, that's the price you have to pay. All right. So I'm going to ask you the draft question, which I asked Charles. Sure. And I'll see. I see how you respond. It's a free country. You can say whatever you want. So I'm a lot older than you and Charles. So I came of age during the Vietnam War. And there was a draft. At the height of the Vietnam War, the opposition to the draft was very strong. As you know, Zach, you're a student of history. And it was one of the largest, loudest anti-war movements in the history of the United States. And it linked itself to other struggles like civil rights struggle, women's liberation struggle, things like environment, healthcare. People were like, for lack of a better word, progressive or liberal. Okay. Then there was so much turmoil from having the draft and the threat of being sent to Vietnam that they made it a volunteer army. The draft was abolished.
Yeah.
War ended. Okay. Oh, man, all these baby boomers are out in the street going, yeah. Oh, man, we believe in civil rights and we believe in liberal programs and we want education for all. And suddenly now that they're there was no threat of being sent to Vietnam. Guess what, Zach? They end up voting for Reagan. And they've been still voting Republican. So here's my question. Should we bring back a draft? If that's the only thing that will make Americans think about somebody other than themselves, even if it's just to protect themselves, and it's a restraint, perhaps, on Americans sending soldiers to other countries because you could have lots of people in the street.
Yeah.
Your thoughts, Zach?
I thought it was like an established fact that that's one of the reasons Nixon did it, was to disenfranchise because if you have like an educated class and a warrior class that are, you know, at odds, and they like to, you know, we would talk about college kids and they'd be like, oh, you can't fucking read and eat crayons and shit. This is like fine. But like, but by segregating that, they made our, you know, our interests kind of at odds with each other. And, so yeah, when you have a warrior class, when you like me, you say my grandfather did, I'm going to do it too. Whereas like I'm going to self-select, I'm going to do it because I feel this calling to do it. Then you don't have to convince anybody, right? Like that's in a lot of things is when you separate those classes, is that the educated class assumes that people just want to go, you know? Mm-hmm. And to some extent that is true, because you know you find all this stuff about like testing your mettle, you know, like as a young man, like war is always glorified, and you say, what would I do if I was in it, and all this shit. So it's like you know you would self-select to some extent, but I do think it was a key part in continuing these wars and getting people to sign in on these wars. I mean, for a long time, even now, people will say that I'm the first like Afghanistan veteran they've ever met, you know? And so if you have zero connection to that, then like, what do you really fucking care if they're dropping bombs? What do you care if 600,000 people, civilians, have been killed there, you know? And so it's just like a complete separation. And it's like divide and conquer has been used in colonialization. And it's, I think, foolish to think that they wouldn't try to use those same tactics on us, you know, and I think it's worked pretty well.
Yeah, it has worked pretty well. Yes, it has. It's we still don't have health care in this country across the board. And the one only guy who really, mainstream politician, who really pushed hard for Bernie Sanders, couldn't get elected. All right.
He would have won.
What's that?
He would have won.
Bernie would have won. Oh my God.
By a landslide.
Well, I don't know about a landslide.
He was pulling 18 points ahead of Trump. Some of the highest ratings on Fox News are when Bernie Sanders goes on.
Yeah.
Because he talks to them. He doesn't talk down to them. Right? Like Hillary Clinton's just like, get fucking over it. And Joe Biden's like, fucking, you know, like, get over it, Trump, or whatever. But Bernie Sanders is saying, I see your problems. Like, I find this to be a problem a lot, just kind of in these progressive movements, where there's some places in this country that white privilege doesn't mean shit, right? Old Appalachian coal towns and shit like that, where everybody's fucking poor, you know, there's no industry, the it's been flooded with drugs. It's the same thing that happens to the West and the South side in like disenfranchised urban areas, you know? So those are the same things happening to different groups. And it's kind of like foolish to say, you know, to kind of just leave out this huge swath of people that are also being disenfranchised and you know, like they're targets for carceral slavery and all that stuff too.
Yeah, listen, man, that was another great riff. I really wanted Bernie to win. I just, would he win in a landslide? I don't care. He would have won.
Yeah.
That's all that matters. You don't even need a landslide.
Yeah.
And then the fight would have really begun.
Yeah.
Okay. But he didn't win. But I'm just saying, like, a day doesn't go by, Zach, where I'm like, and the older I get, this becomes more real, because I have to, the older you get, you have to deal with the medical system more and more. I'm like, God damn, Bernie was so right. Yeah. I was in an emergency room for the, on a tangent with it, for no reason, Zach, because the only reason I was in the emergency room because of gout, because our system is incapable of treating something as relatively easy to treat as gout.
Yeah.
They sent me to an emergency room. And the doctor there told me, Zach, said, this is crazy that you're here, but this is the only way you can get the meds you need to just. And then I was like, Bernie, I said it to the doctor. Bernie was right.
Yeah.
This doctor's like, can't get political here, but. All right. So let's, I'm sorry, went off on tangents and I apologize.
We're all good.
All right. So let's go. All right. So we're going to do a lot of fast forwarding in your biography. To get to the point in 2014 where you show up at a pro-Palestinian anti-slaughter.
You mean 2024?
Rally. My bad. What did I say?
2014.
Oh, my God. Yes. 2024. Fast forward 10 years from 2000. Let's just edit that out. And then let's keep it in. Show the flaws of the host. And so, damn, that's a lot of years to go. Could you just give us like a synopsis of that transition?
Yeah. So
that got you to the point where you burned a flag. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, I knew I was angry about it, you know, as it was happening, just like, you know, military intelligence is a, what do they say, is a, oh, I forget.
Oxymoron.
Yeah, exactly. Look at me being a moron, not being able to. So it's like, while that was happening, but you were asking about like, what it was like to come back. And so being from Southern California, that means a lot of driving, a lot of cars everywhere. You want to go anywhere, you get in the car, you drive 15 minutes, you park, you do whatever, and then, you know, reverse it. But so I had developed this very distinct fear of trash on the road because, you know, that's a lot of times where they hide shit, right? And that's like not an uncommon thing here in America, but you know, it just doesn't register to most people, but like a lot of people who have, you know, survived the occupations in the Middle East, like they're just, you see it and you're just like, I fucking hope that doesn't blow me up, you know? And, you're just like white knuckling the thing. And then, you know, you just get into this elevated state. And so I was finding it very difficult to live when, you know, I'd pull up to everywhere, just like on edge constantly. And so I started more and more to, just like stop going out, stop seeing friends, kind of recluding, becoming more of a recluse. And so that kind of was just getting worse and worse going into the pandemic, which just like put the cap on it. It was like, okay, you've kind of like put yourself into the solidarity, and now now you're in actual confinement, you know? And so that was really, really hard. And then coming out of that, I came to Chicago because my, one of my best friends moved here, in the beginning of 22. And so I visited in April and I fucking loved it. Oh man. Like, you were saying on one of your podcasts, you don't like travel around. Have you ever been to LAX?
Oh man, I go, well, yes.
Okay. So like that place is a shithole, right? I'd be like, oh, you want me to pick you up from LAX? Like, when do you land? I will be there an hour afterwards. You know, stretch your legs a little bit. Yeah. You've been sitting for a long time. But like, you know, going and doing that loop, trying to find people. No, not at Midway. I said, excuse me, where's the orange line? And they pointed and then I got onto a train. My pocket robot told me what train, like how to transfer. And then I was like 7 minutes from my friend's house. And I was like, oh, like not everywhere do you have to like do this whole fucking shindig with a car. Which like I ended up while I was in university after the Marines, I ended up studying in London. And that's just, that is such a great public transit network. But I didn't really I thought I was just like on a traveling high. Everything was cool. I was meeting so many new and interesting people, but I didn't realize that the public transit and just like being able to go and not be constantly on edge, would just like opened up life for me. And so I kind of just felt that as I was in whatever the 45 minutes it took to get from, Midway to Uptown. And yeah. And so like that night I was talking to my wife about moving here.
Wow, that's so deep. The thought, you know, and it's good that I hear this because I have such a jaded attitude about Chicago, having lived here since 81 and followed the politics of Chicago. Sure. And Zach, I would think you would do as well if you followed as long as I did. But the notion, the concept of Chicago as a liberating experience,
yeah,
is really mind blowing. And by the way, take the flyaway. If you go to LAX, take the flyaway. It's a bus. Boom, we're taking you right downtown.
But I'd be picking people up. That's a different thing, you know, like.
There you can pick them up at the flyaway. It lets you off at the train station down there. Anyway, neither here nor there. I'm doing the LA thing. All right. So you're in Chicago. Let's fast forward to the protest itself.
Okay.
And why did you decide to burn a flag? And what kind of, you know, what was going through your mind?
Sure.
This was a good idea. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just walk it back a couple of weeks before that. So Aaron Bushnell, senior airman Aaron Bushnell, set himself on fire in protest of the genocide happening in Gaza. And I have been kind of a participant in these protests and stuff, but I never really kind of knew where I stood with the Middle Eastern community. I would not be surprised or blame them at all if they were like, oh, you're just a fucking occupying stormtrooper, like, you know, what, why should we care about you, basically. So I'd go and I'd chant and I'd just like, you know, I would just be there to support and to elevate those voices because it's not about me, you know. So then that happens with Aaron and this group that I'm a part of called the Party for Socialism and Liberation. They said, oh, you're a veteran. It would be really impactful if you came and spoke. And so I gave like a 12 or 13 minute speech at a church like a couple days after his death. And that kind of like got me whirlwinded into all sorts of groups and a bunch of people who wanted to meet me and kind of like get that going. And during that speech, I held up this flag. So it's a flag that I got in Afghanistan, and there's a thing you can do where you can fly it over, and then it makes it like official, and you know, then you can give it as a gift, like senators and shit get them, you know, like it's like it'll say on this day this flag was flown above whatever, you know, and so that's the flag that I had. And like we were talking about, the entire Afghan war was a fucking sham. There's nothing at all to be proud of. I'm actually ashamed that I flew that flag over Afghanistan, because if it does stand for the things that people who love it thinks it stand for, then they have to understand that then that's tainted, right? And it's a good, you know, that's how burning flags is how you get rid of flags anyways. You know, it's just, you know, are you going to kind of do it for a reason or just because the flag is old? I kind of call it my grandpa's old war box. It's just like all the shit that I have from the Marines, all like the medals and flags and shit that, you know, you just kind of get and you don't really know what to do with. You don't, you know, like, do I get rid of it? You know, I don't really know. And so that flag was just sitting there. And then so as I'm sitting there, you know, and I had just watched this human being be on fire, you know, and just flags just didn't even register on mattering at that point, you know. That's why I'm still baffled about it. Like, I'm talking about the exact same thing as the man who set himself on fire, and people are trying to make a big deal about a flag. So I did it because, one, just to continue his protest in the way that he did it, which was like, you know, a cleansing act of fire. It's a metaphor for a reason. You know, is a thing of personal accountability. You know, now I've gotten the chance to publicly apologize to the Afghan people. And that's more than Joe Biden or George Bush can fucking say, you know? And so, Yeah, it was not a light decision to be made, but it was kind of like an easy decision to be made. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think if you asked anybody who knows me if they would rather I set a flag or fire on fire or set myself on fire, like, you know, the but the thing is, like, this is something that is absolutely worth going to all the way to 11 about, right? Like, this isn't just asking kindly for healthcare, right? Right? Like, this is, kids are starving this second. And with starvation, as I'm sure you know, like, there is a point where even if you get food back, you're still going to die, right? And that's with extreme specialized medical care. And that's not what the Palestinians have. So it's like, yeah, I get that people don't want their feelings hurt. And I get that, you know, like, all this, but like, some of the most egregious acts of in human history are being committed right now. And they're being committed with our money, with our weapons, with our training, you know, and, you know, it's happening with complete impunity. So I think that whatever we have to do, we have to keep the pressure on. And so if the worst thing that I could do, or like, you know, or something as simple as just setting a flag on fire means that I get to come talk to you, I get to come talk to other, you know, newspapers and stuff like that. So it's like, I think that we need to just keep the pedal to the metal, and it needs to get more and more. See, the thing is, like, there was no escalation. This was a de-escalation, right? Like, it didn't go flag then person because they didn't stop, right? It went person, and then the situation has gotten worse in like the 3 or 4 weeks it took me to actually burn the flag, right? Like, Aaron Bushnell didn't even know about the pier that is being built with Palestinian bodies, like, still inside of it, right? Like, he killed himself before that shit happened. Like, back when we were arguing about whether or not the IDF, like, bombed that hospital, remember? There was, like, the big media storm. Now they bombed all 29. There's not one standing. And there's no more outrage. There's no more like, oh, did they do it? Was it Hamas? Was it a bad, like, no, they just admit to it. They've destroyed every single fucking hospital. They've destroyed every piece of human infrastructure. So, like, I don't know, like, setting a flag on fire seemed like the simplest thing to do, you know? And it did kick up like a media shitstorm, and it made life a little bit harder for some of the older people. And you know, I respect that. But at the end of the day, like, we just need to keep the pressure on. And so if the older people are going to do that, if not, we're going to protest, we're going to burn shit, we're going to, like, we're just going to have to keep the pressure on, because the Biden administration is obviously not listening. Sorry. Go ahead.
All right. So I'm going to fast forward to the great city council debate. So again, I've said this on the mic before. This is my position, for what it's worth. The people who went after, in the city council, went after Byron. This was about bigger things. I said this when Byron was on the show. Yeah. Alderman, you can listen to that recording, Zach, and listeners.
Yeah, I did that one.
Missed it. Okay, yeah. I just said, I go, Byron, they're getting back at you, because you are who you are. And it's also an attempt to really embarrass Mayor Brandon Johnson.
Yeah.
They're really going after Mayor Brandon Johnson. Now, Mayor Brandon Johnson's been playing, you know, he's talking about getting public funding for the Bears and the White Sox. I've noticed the media is beginning to change a little bit in their coverage of him, which is very interesting. And I talked about it in the show earlier today. Isn't that interesting? Anyway, all right. I don't want to go down that path, Zach. I'm going to show restraint. So there was a motion to censure Byron Cecil Lopez and strip him of his chairmanship of the housing committee, but ultimately was voted down. But there was a debate at the city council. And again, Byron did not burn the flag. Zach burned. So Zach can't be the housing committee chairman, but it had nothing to do with Byron.
But I should still be able to do it, because if you get punished for using your right, you don't have that right.
So if you were Alderman Zach Kamm, let's just pause and think about that one, ladies and gentlemen. Which ward would elect Alderman Zach Kamm? So let's say you were Alderman Zach Kamm of the we'll make you the alderman. I love all these aldermen. I'm trying to think of a liberal ward that would elect you. And I like all the aldermen who are there. And I don't want to make them feel like, I want them to be replaced. Let's say you are the alderman of the downtown, Bill Conway's.
Yeah, I just think it's if you get punished for using one of your rights by the government, right? So this is not a private corporation. It's not a different employee contract. This is the government. So you cannot be punished by the government for using your First Amendment rights, right? So that means that you shouldn't get censured because it's a protected speech. You know, it's even been litigated in the Supreme Court. And so, like, I kind of understand what they're saying, but that's very short-sighted because, like,
are you an absolutist on that? Now, let's just think about it. Are you an absolutist about it? What if someone were a Nazi?
Well, I mean, that's what I was about to say is some of these alder people were speaking at events with Proud Boys and Nazis and shit like that. And so they weren't, and I don't think they should. Like, you know, if the punishment should come from the people, right? Like, I don't think that it's the government's business to censure them, but it should be the people's business to say, hey, I don't want, people who fraternize with Proud Boys and Nazis to be elected. And then that's their prerogative. And then that takes away the part of the government, you know, punishing somebody for using their rights.
I got to think about that. I really do, Zach. I'm not quite sure.
Because it's not a hypothetical. I mean, like, they were talking about it in these debates that you're referring to at City Hall. They were like, this person, this person, this person were at these events that you were at, you know? So it's like, they're...
Yeah, I see your point. And what I'm saying is... I do believe that the city council has a right to censor someone in their ranks who violates what they consider protocol of human decency. And so I do believe, sure. So for instance, if it turned out that the chairman of the zoning committee, I'm just making this up, ladies and gentlemen, I'm just hypothetical, okay, calm down, is a Nazi, I would expect the city council to vote to remove him from the chairmanship and censor him. And then the ACLU, if they want to take it to court, can take it to court. Mm-hmm. If they want to defend the Nazis' right to be the chairman of the zoning committee, they could do that. I do not think there's a never-ending right to...
See, I agree with you, but who sets those rules? Right? Because if it's the people who govern us now, I don't want them to choose. I'd rather it be absolutist than them choose. Right? Like, because it's like, who gets to pair off this little part of the pie we're not allowed to talk about? Yeah. You know?
And that's a good point. It's a good point. I'll say this to that. That's democracy. We elect them, so they get to choose for that reason. And that said, I would definitely have voted against censoring Byron. The guy didn't even burn a flag.
Yeah. Especially with like another alder person was there and just wasn't the target of wasn't this guy that they're trying to target, so they didn't bring it up, you know.
That's Zach, why I say this is not about Gaza. This is not about the flag. This is not about protest. Yeah. This is about embarrassing and humiliating Brandon Johnson and Byron Cicero Lopez.
But I think they ended up doing the opposite, right? They just showed what a clown show it was. They lost, 1-2 or however you make that ratio. None of them said anything of substance. None of them did anything. Like, you know what? I'm not a political strategist, but if I wanted to fucking do this, I'd be calling a special meeting to get veteran housing and say, see, he'd rather speak at this than do his job. And look, we're so much more serious. Like, look, our emergency meeting so we can get 650 fucking veterans off the street tomorrow. Right. Like, but they didn't. Instead, they said, oh, let's just have this dog and pony show. Let's just reiterate all the stupid fucking talking points that we've been having, you know, from the 60s and to Colin Kaepernick about all this shit about the flag and respect and all this stuff. And it's just like, I think it worked against them. I think any normal person who saw that was just like, that's fucking ridiculous. That's just political targeting. And I don't think it worked in their favor.
I hope you're right. See, I see this in terms of Chicago politics. And I see this in terms as an effort that's been ongoing since the day he was elected to unseat Brandon Johnson. This is how I see it. I speak for myself. I'm not speaking for Zach. I'm just saying what I think. And so I believe this is part of an effort that began when Brandon was elected, that has been ongoing for a year, that has tried to make every single issue in the city of Chicago viewed as a failure of Brandon Johnson, to send the message to the people of the city of Chicago. This is what happens when you elect a black progressive. Brandon doesn't call himself a lefty, so I'll call him a progressive. Sure. I'll use his words for himself. And I think that's the message they've been sending, that he's controlled by the Chicago Teachers Union, and they've taught Chicagoans to like hate the Chicago Teachers Union because the Chicago Teachers Union stands up for poor kids.
Yeah.
This is me. And this is what I believe this is all about, Zach.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'm beginning to see the rhetoric starting to soften now that Brandon is open-minded, supposedly, about giving money to the Bears and the White Sox. Yeah. I'm like,
yeah,
even I can see this. So I don't know where the public is right now, Zach. You know, people have been brainwashed. So I don't know. You're right. It was a 29-16 vote. It's pretty decisive.
Yeah. And like none of them came out with this groundbreaking, like, you know, oh man, they gave a speech that really shook this conversation to its core. Like, no, they just said the same shit that people have been saying every time there's been a flag burning since the inception of the American flag.
And that last point you made about helping vets who need help. So true.
Right. Like, you say I shouldn't be an alder person, but I would have fucking won that. You know, like if you like you would have gotten outflanked. I would have been like, oh, yeah, we're going to censure you. But I'm actually fucking implementing something that I think should actually happen. But they don't care about that.
I think you live in the reason I didn't want you to be the alderman of the 46th Ward. Angela Clay, shout out Angela, a good friend of this show. She's your alderwoman. I believe you're in the 46th ward.
I'm in 48. Lenny is mine.
Oh,
so,
I love Lenny. Yeah, Lenny would come on the show.
She's going to do a way better job than ever. I ever could.
Yeah. So that's why I didn't want to go. Well, say you're the alderman of the 48th ward. Yeah. Anyway, Zach, we're pretty much run out of time. I could probably talk to you forever. You do have a gift of gab. That was the first question I asked Zach. I said, Zach, come on my podcast, man. Are you going to freeze when you look at the mic? The dude's got a mic, ladies. You can't see like, that.
This is not going to be a problem. Me talking too much is going to be the problem.
So I'll tell you what I told Charles. You passed the audition. I'll bring you back. We can talk politics, local politics, national politics, whatever. You got a lot of guts, young man. I got to tell you that. I
appreciate that.
Yeah, you do have a lot of guts. I, in my heart of hearts, believe this. People think I'm also jaded and cynical. I do believe. Okay, so when October 7th happened, I was devastated by all that slaughter, those 1,200 Israelis who were killed.
Well, it's like 630 in the aftermath, now. Just so you know, that was a WMD number. It's down to like 630 now.
If it's 630, 500, whatever, and I have not seen that particular story, I still think it's pretty freaking devastating. But at the time, Zach, I just said, don't do anything. People thought I was just don't follow the United States example of 9/11. I knew no one was going to listen to me. And I do believe that the protests have had an impact. There's no doubt in my mind. And it's I understand that thousands of people have been killed in the aftermath. But this is my clumsy way of saying that I do believe the protests in this country have had a positive impact. And, you know, it just does remind this old, it does remind this old man of Vietnam and the impact it had. So,
yeah,
you know, you're all a part of that. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. Zach.
And I just want to point out like the different types of protesting. So there's the being out in the streets. There have been the, you know, the voting for Gaza, voting uncommitted, like those are also ways of this protest. And and a lot of people getting their BDS, like, you know, Starbucks has lost a couple million dollars in revenue since this has started. Yeah, I mean, it's horrible. I definitely don't love the, you know, attacking civilians, but there are like a lot of weird 9/11 coincidences that happened on October 7th. Like, for example, they saw Hamas training for this exercise going in. They held this concert there against the security concerns of the people to have a concert so big, so near the thing. There's actually evidence that Hamas didn't even know the concert was going on. They were just going to attack the military. But yeah, so I mean, it's like not great that they ended up killing a bunch of civilians, but like the civilian casualty rate on the other side is much, much, much more devastating.
So I'm really pushing back on everything you said the 2 minutes before you said that thing. And I will always push back on that. And I also push back on the 9/11 reference. And I will always push back. Every time you and I have a conversation, I will push back on that.
Well, I mean, it took Israeli police 6 hours to respond to a mass casualties situation.
Which is six probably, hours.
You could have watched a movie at the concert, ran to Tel Aviv, watched another movie, and then that's when the Israeli police got to this.
It is probably as much to do with the... God, this is a whole other path at the end of the show. The lack... I mean, the position that Netanyahu left Israel in... How can I articulate this? We really should be closing the show down. But it was like the whole process of locking out Palestinians and putting them in Gaza or the West Bank and then protecting Israel behind a wall. Remember Donald Trump said, oh, it works for Israel, it'll work for us. Yeah. Remember that, America? And then not paying attention. I mean, just the lack of, remember I pointed out the lack of logic in sending out a human being to go look for explosives that could be blown up while people are watching him looking for explosives. It's like, why are you doing this? And then not pay attention. So I think that's just what you just said underscores the utter lack of preparation that Israel had. So distracted. By the way, you're right. The 9/11 metaphor, George Bush wasn't even paying attention to the evidence that was right there. So I know what you're suggesting, that he wanted it to happen. I'm not sure I'm going to go there.
I'm just floating it as like these coincidences that like why this quote most highly trained military and police force in the world takes 6 hours to respond, and then they respond with Apaches and tanks and kill like a lot of their own hostages. But there is one thing that I kind of want to get across that not a lot of people understand is the IDF is not a good army. They're getting spanked by dudes with homemade weapons and joggers and sandals. They're just hiding in their armor. You can watch videos of Hamas guys walking straight up to tanks from the side. And so in order to run armor through urban areas, you need infantry, lots of fucking infantry to spread up out in front of and to the sides so that they can't just pop out with an RPG and take out your, you know, $50 million tank or whatever, right? But they don't do that. None of them ever get out of the tank or the armored personnel carrier because they're all so scared because they're not actually well trained. This is why it's actually really good for like putting off a regional war, is because the Israeli, you can tell when a military is not very effective with its ground war because they will overly rely on bombs and tanks and armor and stuff. And you can see that happening pretty plainly. Yeah. But like Syria, Yemen, Hamas, like all these places, they don't have an air force. They don't have anything except ground combat. And so if it were to come to a thing between the IDF and any of those groups in ground combat, the IDF is going to get spanked.
All right. Now you're just doing trash talk.
I'm just telling you from a military, like I am a veteran of you know, armored warfare.
I know, but it's just trash talk.
A little bit.
It is trash talk. And I hear it on the other side. And I don't like it when I hear it on the other side. When I hear strong defenders of Israel talk about how superior the IDF is. And everything you're saying about the IDF could have been said about the Marines in Afghanistan.
No, and that's exactly why I'm pointing this out, is because it was such a problem for us having to stay in a line to stay protected from the IEDs, and we were not able to do. That's where a lot of our problems came from. And so it's from personal experience. It's not just to trash talk. I mean, I don't like them, obviously, but like it is coming from some like level of military analysis. And not to say that we're so much better. It is to say that we were finding the exact same problem. The only thing was we weren't too scared to get out of our trucks to deal with it.
Well, there's the trash talk.
We got out and they don't. So, I mean, like, it's just the facts.
And there was a limited war in Afghanistan.
It's not even a war in Gaza, though.
Yeah, it's just,
it's way more of a war in Gaza than it was in Afghanistan.
And so that's what my ultimate point is when I went back to the draft. I mean, at some points, at some stages, in some conflicts, it's like you're asking, like, people don't even want to fight. And I believe that's was the case with the United States and Iraq and Afghanistan. The number of people who volunteered was very small, as you pointed out, relative to the rest of the population. If we had a draft, we would have seen a lot more resistance in this country to those wars. And I have a feeling it's very similar in Israel. But we have now literally gone 14 minutes over the time limit that I had. And it's all your fault.
Yeah, definitely.
Zach, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
You'll be back.
I would love to anytime.
We'll the conversation and maybe launch your aldermanic career.
I'd have to move wards first, and that, you know.
No, you have to.
Yeah, so maybe if Lenny ever wants to step down, I can.
Lenny, don't listen to
Zach. Don't listen to me.
Just got elected about how many months ago? All right. That's Zach Kamm. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.